Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I used to call myself a closet Backstreet Boys fan. Not so much closet anymore. I am an unabashed fan of the Backstreet Boys, actually. And they still get me pretty jazzed up. So I still enjoy listening to their music sometimes when I'm cleaning or times when I'm running. Now, a lot of times when I'm running, I listen to podcasts because it helps if I have my mind engaged with, I don't know, what someone's telling a story or if someone is teaching. So depending on what kind of a podcast I'm listening to, having my mind engaged causes me to think less about how much I hurt and how many more miles I have to go. But now and then, I just like to veg out and listen to music because that gives me extra energy as well. And so the Backstreet Boys are definitely in my running rotation. I hope that you had a good Monday. It was a Monday, wasn't it? So because I procrastinated my yard work over the weekend and because I didn't have a Sunday to get anything done, I mean, Sunday was all about sports, right? So starting at 10 o'clock Eastern time, 7 a.m. Pacific time, the final round of the Masters was on TV. And then it was literally all the way through two rounds of football, then Sunday night football, and then right into work. So I actually tweeted this Monday morning when I went to bed that my workday had started roughly 21 and a half hours ago. I mean, it was a long haul to have I'm glad we don't have the Masters typically during November on football weekends because that'd be a lot. And so I thought I was going to catch up and sleep a full 8 hours on Monday. But for whatever reason, I woke up early and I couldn't get back to sleep, which is typically my issue. I can fall asleep, no problem. But when I wake up, maybe the cat wakes me up or I wake up to use the bathroom and then I have trouble getting back to sleep, which sucks. So that was my issue. I couldn't get back to sleep. And so I decided finally the sun's out. I only have so much daylight these days because of the time change and because it now gets dark roughly around 5 o'clock, 5:15. So I got up, took care of Penster, and then decided I would do some yard work. So I raked my entire front yard, bagged a bunch of leaves, and then I was aerating my front yard it was twilight. The stars were already popping out when I was aerating my front yard. And guess what happened? Oh my gosh. I went to put my tools back in my shed. So I do not have a garage. I have a shed. It's in my backyard. And all of my lawn care tools are in there, not just the manual tools, but my lawnmower and my bicycles in there as well. And just, you know, a bunch of plant stuff and fertilizers and whatever else. So I left the door open to my shed in the backyard because I pulled a bunch of things out so I could get to the rake and the shovel. And I go to put stuff back in and I hear this scratching around in my shed. So it freaks me out a little bit because I don't want scratching around. I know we have skunks in the neighborhood. And so I have my flashlight. I can't really see in there much. And I flash my flashlight. And what is there with this giant? Well, he wasn't giant. He was a big old fat squirrel up in the corner of my shed, wooden shed. So he's like using his little claws to climb up the far corner of my shed. So he's freaked out and starts chattering. I don't really scream. I wouldn't call it a scream. It was more like a like a screech type of a thing, a truncated screech. And so he and I scared each other half to death. And I take my flashlight. I have this giant mag light. And I start banging on what is a metal bucket that I have in my shed. So I bang on this metal bucket, hoping to scare him out the back of the shed. Now, I thought he could go up under the eaves and kind of drop down on the other side. But what does he do? He hides up in the corner. So he gets as far back as he can, big fat butt on this squirrel, gets as far back as he can into the corner and wedges himself underneath the roof, but I can still see his claws. So I'm like, you dummy, get out of my shed. So I'm banging on the bucket and I'm making a bunch of noise. And finally, the squirrel either stops, like, so his claws disappear. He either stops freaking out and thinks that he's hiding and I'll leave him alone, or he actually did drop out the other side of the shed, back kind of behind. There's a row of trees behind my shed that mark my property line. And so I don't really know what happened, but I get inside. I shut the shed, of course. I had to, because I don't want other animals going into the shed all night while I'm gone. So I get inside, and my mom had called. I missed her call. So I called her back, and I tell her about how Mr. Squirrel and I scared each other half to death. And she said, well, you better go open the door so he can get out. No, if I open the door, other animals will go in. Well, Amy, you don't want him to die in there. Well, that's true. No, I don't want a squirrel to die in my shed. He shouldn't have gone in my shed in the first place, dummy. Well, you better go open the door, Mom says. No, no way. I'm not opening the door to the shed, leaving it open all night, and waiting for a family of squirrels to take up residence in my shed. That's not happening. So, so I left the door closed. Tomorrow morning, I have one more step that I need to do on my front lawn, and I got to do it before we get some rain. So I'm going to quick do some fertilizing on the front lawn. So I have to go into the shed in the morning when I get home from the show. And I'm going to pull a couple of tools out, like a spreader that I borrowed from my neighbors. And I'm wondering if my shed is going to smell like a dead squirrel. Now, I'm thinking not, because it's only going to be a few hours. But I'm wondering if he's still in there or if he found his way out. This is definitely not a watertight air, like a soundproof watertight shed of any. I mean, it's just a wooden, little wooden building. It's older. It was part of the property when I bought it. So I don't know, but I'm kind of wondering if maybe I should open the door by standing back, because what if the squirrel is dying to get out of the shed? Also, what if the squirrel has pooped all over the inside of my shed? This is the type of thing they don't prepare you for with the homeownership manual. It's not really a manual, but no one told me that a squirrel was going to try to take over my shed. Anyway, we scared each other half to death. I don't know if the squirrel can get out. I do know the door is closed. I don't know what's going to happen when I open the shed on Tuesday morning. There better not be poop or a family of squirrels. What if he decided it was warmer in there, and that he would rather hibernate or stay in there for the winter, and I can't get him out? What if he takes over my shed and makes it his home? It is out of the elements. And the problem is, he's in the far corner where I can't get to him. And also, what would I do even if I could get to him? Poke him with a rake? I mean, the squirrel's not going to come out the door as long as I'm standing in the door. And the shed's not big enough for me to get around and move and just say, here, Mr. Squirrel, the door is open. So I haven't decided yet. You guys tell me what you think. Should I, let's just say for the sake of argument, that the squirrel is still in the shed in the morning. Should I leave the door open while I go to sleep during the daytime? Or will the squirrel destroy my shed, A? B, will he invite all of his friends and family in for a pre-Thanksgiving meal? And in that case, maybe I don't want to leave the door open. So I'm not exactly sure what to do. Any of you ever had a squirrel or any other kind of a animal? At least it's not a bat. But any other kind of an animal take up residence in your shed or your garage, what do you do? This is not something I'm prepared to deal with. I don't like critters. Well, they're cute outside when I'm inside, or they're cute when they're not in my shed. So yeah, that was part of my Manic Monday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thank you for caring. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, if you have suggestions about how to evacuate the squirrel from my shed. And then also on our Facebook page. Oh, I did put a poll up. You guys. I put up a poll. I don't know if it's an interesting poll. I just want to know your level of interest in NBA free agency. So here are the options. And this is on Twitter, A-Law Radio. It's also on our CBS Sports Radio Twitter. I don't know if we have access to our After Hours Twitter yet. I'll figure it out at some point. Here are your four options. You're like a kid on Christmas when it comes to NBA free agency. And there are people out there who think this is great. The silly season is so much fun. They love to see all the big moves and all-stars changing uniforms. Number two option, relatively entertained. Number three option, only skimming the headlines, meaning you will read the posts on Twitter. Maybe you'll see it if you're on a, let's say you have the CBS Sports app, which I do, and it sends you headlines. Okay, you see it, but you're not interested enough to actually read the column. That's number three, only skimming the headlines. Or four, too focused on football. Now, obviously, that could apply to anything. So you're too focused on the holidays. You're too focused on cooking your Thanksgiving dinner. It's essentially a polite way of saying you don't give a crap. Which I was not putting in a poll because I'm not so sure my boss would love that. So please, if you would, help a girl out because your host doesn't normally do polls. It's not really my area of expertise. And I labored over this one. So please take the poll on Twitter, A-Law Radio. I haven't had a chance to put it up on Facebook yet. I promise I will. I haven't had a chance to eat dinner yet. So my stomach is growling. It's just been one of those nights. Coming up in 10 minutes, Jerry Palm of CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. Why? Because we have a lot of people out here who are college football fans, college basketball fans. It's certainly been a topsy-turvy, challenging year for the college sports scene, as it has been for pretty much everything else in sports and in real life in 2020. But I honestly don't know the answers to the questions that I'm going to pose to Jerry. So how many bowls are there actually going to be in 2020? And what happens if some of the major bowls, the college football playoff bowls, decide they're not going to host games? What about the college football playoff rankings? If one team or one school has played three games and another team has played seven games, how do you evaluate them? What kind of formulas work for the college football playoff rankings? So there's a lot of questions, and I'm really excited to get Jerry's, not only his reaction to what we've seen so far, but also to get to the nitty gritty. Because if anyone knows the answers, Jerry does. And then also college basketball. You know, college basketball would be underway by now if this were a typical season. Generally, they start the second weekend in November, but they haven't started yet. One league has canceled. What about March Madness, that event that we know and love so much that we missed out on in 2020? So Jerry's going to join us. We'll probably keep him for a good few minutes so we can get to the information on both college football and college basketball. So that's coming up in 10 minutes here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's see. We have some news from the NBA that we know for sure, but we also have other kind of reports and rumors and sources. And so here's always my caveat as you take my poll. Here's the caveat. Oh, you can share my poll too if you like. You can retweet it. That'd be cool. Share it with all your friends because, you know, you got nothing better to do right now. I got nothing better to do right now. Oh, except for get that damn squirrel out of my shed. So we've got news, actual news. Chris Paul is going to the Phoenix Suns. So the Suns owner, his name is Robert Sarver. I don't expect you to know that, but the Suns owner wanted someone who could be a leader for this young team. Okay, could be kind of a voice, could be a not just a point guard, but a quarterback, so to speak. Could be a guy that brings in a winning tradition, that brings in high standards, that brings in leadership, that's uber competitive, that kind of galvanizes this team and gives them a voice. So here's Chris Paul, who's got a ton of wisdom and experience, joining a relatively young group. Devin Booker, of course, being his backcourt mate, which is awesome. I mean, I think it's going to be amazing to see Devin Booker back on the court again following what was a really cool exclamation point to the season for the Suns, the 8-0 run in the bubble in Orlando. All right, so Chris Paul leaves Oklahoma City. They get a bunch of peeps in place. Ricky Rubio being one of those. Also going the other direction, Kelly Oubre. Okay, so there's a first-round pick in there. Chris Paul's worth a lot on the basketball black market. But what does this mean for the Suns, who were trending up when we last saw them and are now adding, as one of our callers pointed out, an alpha male and a guy who at times has not always fit in the places where he's landed?
Chris Paul was ready to move on. The Thunder are clearly in a rebuilding mode. They have literally dozens of first-round picks and second-round picks over the next four or five drafts. They'll add some to the mix. Oubre's a really nice player. Rubio's a really nice player. But Chris Paul wanted to be with a contender. And now that he's with this young Suns team, paired with Devin Booker, and I get it, a very crowded Western Conference, you have to look at Phoenix and you have to see a team that's capable of making some real noise this upcoming season.
Do you recognize that voice? It's Bill Ryder, one of our CBS Sports Radio hosts, and he also moonlights on CBS Sports HQ. He's got a lot of basketball knowledge and acumen. And so Bill Ryder is saying that it was Chris Paul who precipitated this. He wanted to be able to move on. Oklahoma City obviously changing coaches, in full rebuild mode. In fact, they were supposed to be in full rebuild mode last year and then ended up making the playoffs, which was kind of interesting. Not just making the playoffs, but getting into that 4-5 series. And so it's not the right fit for a guy who wants to break through his glass ceiling, get to a conference finals, and compete for a championship. But how does he fit, though? I mean, I think it's interesting to think about, again, his previous stops with the Clippers, his stops very briefly with Houston, where he said he wanted to go, and then to Oklahoma City, which was never his choice. Here's a little more from Bill Ryder.
This guy's a remarkable player. He's a leader for a lot of folks. Now, there's some disagreement on his leadership over the years in different places, but there's no doubt that in Oklahoma City, with a young team, with Chris Paul at the helm as the leader of that team, they overperformed expectations. Phoenix is one of the hottest teams in the NBA at the end of this last bizarre season. They've got two superstars now in Chris Paul and Devin Booker. This is a loaded basketball team that can win a lot of games this year.
Bill Ryder on CBS Sports HQ appears to be optimistic about the future of the Suns, adding Chris Paul. I do think he'll be motivated. This may be his last stop in the NBA. I'm not sure about that. He's in still relatively good shape. But these last couple of moves, the last couple of places he's been, have ended in disappointment and have not gotten him where he wants to go. I would say, when it comes to older athletes, this is why I tell you old dudes rock. When it comes to older athletes, they're in touch with their own sports mortality. They recognize that they only have so many games and so many seasons and so many years left to accomplish their goals. And so they tend to become laser focused and do whatever it takes. They care less about the drama. They care less about stirring up dissension. They care more about reaching the promised land. And this is a great opportunity for Chris Paul if he can bring this locker room together. I love that you're taking my poll. Thank you so, so much. You guys are really cool to help a girl out. So on Twitter, A-Law Radio, gauging your interest in NBA free agency, you pick the option that best suits you. I'll put it up on Facebook during the break. And coming up, Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ. All your questions answered about college football and college basketball. And there are plenty of questions. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
He covers college football, college basketball for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. And Jerry, let's start with college football because that's the season that we are in the midst of. You're a wordsmith. You're a writer. How would you describe the current situation and the current attitude around college football here where we are in mid-November?
It's a bit chaotic. You know, you don't really know what to expect at any given time. With coronavirus, spiking all over the nation again, it makes sense that college football would be impacted by that at a similar level. So last week we had 15 games postponed or canceled. That was a season high. Not quite a season high in terms of the percentage that of the games scheduled, but still pretty close to that. It's Monday night. There are 7 games already postponed or canceled for this week. You know, you've got teams in the Pac-12 that are hoping to make the playoff. They're getting a couple of games canceled every week. So far, not the teams that we expect to be contenders in Oregon and USC, but, you know, you never know. And when you're already scheduled to play 2 fewer games than everyone else, you know, you can't have your contenders losing games along the way if you want to give the committee enough to look at to possibly put you in a playoff. So, conferences are toeing the line, you know, and the medical protocols are definitely taking precedent. But, you know, on the other hand, they're trying to get as many games in as they can, and especially these conferences that started later so that they can try and get into the college football playoff and some of these bowl games.
So you say the word chaotic, and it's certainly up to the College Football Playoff Committee to find some order in the midst of this chaos. What are the baselines for teams that are to be considered for the playoff itself?
They haven't given us any baselines. So everybody's under consideration until the committee decides otherwise. But they haven't set a minimum number of games or anything like that. At least not yet. They've got their work cut out for them this year, though, because when they're doing their rankings, they have some data that they can work with, strength of schedule, things like relative offensive, defensive numbers, and things like that. None of that applies this year because you have at least 4 conferences that have fully isolated themselves from the rest of college football by playing only conference games, which means that the ways that you can compare these teams statistically to others don't exist because they don't play. They're playing in a closed system. So the SEC, for example, there are no statistics that allow you to compare SEC teams to teams in other conferences because they're not playing anybody from other conferences. So really the committee just has eye tests this year.
Wow.
And head-to-head results. And, you know, conference championships have always been a factor. So that's about all they have. It's really going to be a beauty contest this year. and that makes it even harder to not only for them to do their job, but for anybody to argue against what they've done because you have no data to back it up. Nobody has data to back it up.
So then, Jerry, you're constantly looking at the rankings, although generally it's based on mathematical formulas, which you've got figured out. But if it's a beauty contest and it's eye test, who belongs in that top 4 right now?
Yeah. Well, right now, it's okay. I mean, it's not too difficult to sort out because you've got 3 major undefeated teams that are doing very well in Alabama, Notre Dame, and Ohio State, and then Clemson. Would probably be the 4th one right now with just the loss to Notre Dame playing shorthanded. So it would probably be those 4 at the moment. But, you know, Florida and Texas A&M are right there. The Pac-12 has just started playing. So you've got, you know, Oregon and USC. You've got Wisconsin from the Big Ten and Indiana surging right now. And they'll get a shot at Ohio State this week. So a long way to go. As these teams start to weed each other out a little bit, which normally by mid-November has already happened.
Who are the other teams that you would say have a chance to, I don't want to say weasel their way in there because that sounds bad, have a chance to work their way into the top 4?
Yeah, well, there'll be teams in the SEC like Texas A&M and Florida, and especially Florida, because they would get a chance to win the league. A&M doesn't really have any control in that, having already lost to Alabama and being in the same division. But Florida would have a chance to win the SEC. Indiana, Northwestern, Wisconsin, all still undefeated in the Big Ten and chasing Ohio State. The Big 12 probably doesn't have a good candidate this year. And the Pac-12 has got at least a couple. An undefeated champion from the Pac-12 would stand a strong chance because the committee has never left out an undefeated conference champion from one of the major conferences. So, but, you know, there's a long way to go in the Pac-12 because they've only played, had 2 weeks worth of games, and
right.
four of them already canceled. So it's a long way to go for that league.
Whew. Jerry Palm from CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ talking college football. We'll get to some college basketball here in a second. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. What will the bowl season look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that we're going to know for sure. We've already had six bowls canceled.
Altogether, just completely canceled.
Yeah, right. So we're down to, but then one added. So we actually have 37 games currently scheduled for bowl season, and that includes, you know, the six bowls that the committee controls, the two semifinals and the four other games that they control, and then 31 other games. But with the coronavirus spiking in places around the country, some of these other bowls could get canceled. Also, the fact that you could end up with teams that have sub-500 records and that are bowl eligible. Everybody's bowl eligible this year because the NCAA waived those requirements.
Mm.
So you might see some of these games get canceled because, you know, people can't travel, which is a part of, you know, the bowl experience. The Sun Bowl, there was a story today because of the coronavirus spiking especially badly in El Paso, Texas, where that game is played. They may not be able to play that game this season. They don't have to decide that yet. It doesn't get played till around New Year's Eve. But, you know, there's some of these things, you know, external forces, governmental forces, could end up canceling some of these bowls. So I'll be surprised if all 37 games get played, but I expect most of them will get played.
So if that's the case then, and it's kind of a last second thing where maybe it's not canceled until after we get through the college football season, any idea how they might handle that?
No, I mean, if the bowls don't get played, you know, for example, the Music City Bowl, that's the Big Ten and the SEC. If for some reason that game is canceled, then the teams that would have gone there will either go end up, you know, there'll be one less team from each of those leagues playing in the postseason. Not going to be any other arrangements. Whatever games can be played will be played and filled with the teams that can fill them, and then everybody else will just, you know, your season's over.
Okay. So then worst case scenario, because the ones that matter in terms of the playoff are the Sugar Bowl, the Rose Bowl that are both supposed to take place on January 1st, and the National Championship from Miami. What happens if those games can't be held when they're scheduled? I mean, the Rose Bowl's in California where they're tightening restrictions even today.
Yeah. So that's a good question. The committee, I know, is already making contingency plans to either, I know they don't want to move the games away from those facilities unless they absolutely have to.
Okay.
But one of the other concerns is what happens if one of the semifinalist teams has a COVID outbreak, you know, a week before the semifinal or a week before the final, after the semifinals. And so they're making contingency plans to possibly push games later in the calendar so that, you know, teams don't have to, I don't know, forfeit or play so shorthanded that they aren't really themselves. So they are making contingency plans to push games later if necessary. But right now they want to play those games where they're scheduled, when they're scheduled, and then they'll deal with contingencies, you know, when the problems arise, which would be, you know, closer to Christmas time.
Okay. Do you think it's worth it? For all of this, do you think it's worth it to have the season, at least what we do have of it?
I think as much normalcy as we can have is worth having, as long as they can do it safely. That's the caveat for everything, as long as they can do it safely.
Yes, that is the bottom line for pretty much anything happening in 2020, and yet there is no guarantee. So college football forges on. Jerry, with some really good information about the rankings, it's going to be a beauty contest, and about what is right now kind of an uncertain bowl season that we're taking one day and one week at a time. What about college basketball? I'm going to ask that question of Jerry Palm coming up next. We're going to stick around. You stick around, too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
We've talked about college football and all of the elements that we know, as well as the questions for which we have no answers. But let's pivot to college basketball now, if we can. And I'm going to start in essentially the same place I did with college football, Jerry, and just ask you, what is the state of college hoops right now on November 16th or 17th, as we're supposed to be tipping off the season?
We've already had some teams with COVID outbreaks that have shut down their programs for now. They've taken a couple weeks off to get things cleared out. With the season starting November 25th, which is next Wednesday, some of those teams won't be able to start on time, and there'll be game cancellations and disruptions like we're seeing in college football. But as time goes on, college basketball has the advantage of starting their season 2 months later than football. It's an advantage. It's actually both an advantage and a disadvantage. The disadvantage is things are spiking again now, right as their season is starting. So they may end up losing some of November and December for a lot of these teams. But the advantage is there may be a vaccine around the corner for them to preserve the later part of the season with much less disruption than we're seeing now. And the vaccines that are being tested right now are being tested at a very high efficiency rate or efficacy rate. So that's very promising. But obviously it's not over yet and it's not available yet.
Right.
But basketball could benefit from that later in the season, and that obviously would be a help. So we'll see how that goes. But the NCAA today announced that they are not going to have the tournament at all of these various sites like they normally do, and they're going to try and consolidate into one metropolitan area, specifically Indianapolis, where the NCAA is located, in a city that's used to holding events of that scale and has the facilities to do that. So they haven't worked it out with Indianapolis yet, but it's likely that they will. They have a good partnership with the city, of course. So it's the NCAA tournament. All 68 teams, all of those games will likely get played in the Indianapolis area this March and April.
Wow.
And I think that will make for an interesting event. And that would probably be I don't think that they'll go back on that if all of a sudden we've got a vaccine and everything's good. I think that's how it's going to get played this year.
Last year, even before they canceled March Madness, I remember you and I had a conversation and there were schools that were pulling out. I suppose that is also a possibility. So what have you heard about potentially streamlining the tournament and not having nearly as many teams just so it would be easier to manage?
They don't have to make that decision now. So far, only the Ivy League has canceled their entire season. So if that's the case, then what you have is one less automatic bid, one more at-large team, and you go with 68 and see what happens. But if we get into February and March and a lot of programs are pulling their plug on this, then the NCAA will have to adjust at that time. I'm sure they've given that a little bit of thought already. But right now, you know, their plan is to play an NCAA tournament in as controlled an environment as they can manage. It won't be a bubble in the purest sense like the NBA had and the NHL had, but they're going to try and control the environment for the teams that play in the NCAA tournament as best they can. And one of the ways that they can do that is by having everybody in one general area where they can be hands-on.
The tournament, I don't know if people realize how much income it generates for the NCAA, but also for the media presence that covers it, not just the TV networks that carry it. And then you think about the number of businesses that very often see the type of spike in their tourism and just influx for their economy because they're hosting pods. And so it's still disappointing, as much as it would be great to have it, and we're obviously not going to be complaining about that, but it's still disappointing for those cities that were supposed to host sites and now they know that that's likely not going to happen.
Yeah, it's all of this, you know, the impact on not just college sports and the athletic departments and the money that they have lost, which is, you know, pretty well documented, but for all of these colleges, you know, especially college towns, you know, where Saturday when everybody shows up for the football game and all the businesses that depend on that, those six or seven Saturdays a year are not getting that in college football. And it's not just devastating to the athletic department, but it's been devastating to some of the communities that these colleges are in that depend on that income. So there's a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, collateral damage in terms of, you know, what's going on in college athletics right now in the locations where these schools are. Where the tournaments are held, all of that. A lot of people are suffering in ways that are probably not getting as much coverage.
Does college basketball require that kids be on campus? Because that's something that you're hearing a lot around the country, where schools are going remote learning over the course of, you know, the holidays and maybe even starting their spring semester later. So is that not even a thing? You don't need to have kids on campus to have basketball?
Yeah, the general student body doesn't have to be on campus. And that's been true through college football, because there are some schools that have been doing strictly remote learning all fall. And yet their football team is on campus and practicing and playing. So, and in some ways that might actually be better for the athletes, because there's less people around to spread the virus to them on campus. But a lot of campuses have, you know, some on campus and some doing remote. My son is at Purdue, and they're doing that. That's what they're doing, some remote and some on campus. And, you know, you manage it as best as you can on campus, and you manage it as best as you can with your team. And the fact that they have the daily testing now possible has really helped with college football. And I'm sure it'll help with college basketball as well, as much as they can be available.
What's this been like to do your job through all of this with so much that you don't know? I mean, it's kind of hard to predict games and matchups when you have no idea who's actually going to be playing or who's going to make it through a season.
Yeah, that's it's been a unique twist that I hope I never have to deal with again. trying to predict what the committee's going to do when they don't have information to work with. You know, usually I'm predicting what these committees in both sports are going to do based on available data. Well, you know, if the data is not valid this year, then there's a lot more, you know, really eye test involved. And that's a lot more art than it is science. And there's more art than you would think anyway. But yeah, it's going to be a tougher year, but that's okay. We'll just roll with it.
Yes, the fact that we're even talking about sports is, as you say, some sense of normalcy. And beauty contests can be fun every now and then. You can find Jerry on Twitter at JPPalmCBS, and you want to make sure you follow him and then read his columns, because he'll take you through the step-by-step process as we get closer to the rankings and, of course, then on into the postseason for college football. It's always good to catch a couple of minutes with you, Jerry. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. Anytime.
Jerry Palm with great information, and in fact, offering some information, answers to questions that I didn't know, which is why I was so excited to talk to him. So essentially, there are a lot of uncertainties, but even if we're not used to that, at least we expect that in 2020. College basketball is supposed to tip in the next couple of weeks for those leagues and franchises, for those leagues and programs that are still committed to it. And right now, the breaking news from Monday, which I think is fascinating, good timing with Jerry, is that the NCAA would like to hold its entire March Madness operation, its entire tournament, in the city of Indianapolis. And even though Indy officials don't have any idea what the NCAA is talking about, at this point, maybe they're just playing dumb, but the NCAA has indicated that they're in talks with Indy officials and the surrounding metro area to be the one site which would host the entire men's basketball tournament. So I think this is an intriguing idea, although Jerry seems to believe it would not be a full bubble, but instead it would be more of a controlled environment, and that you would have the daily testing, of course, and you would have teams using the same hotels over the course of the tournament. So at least you could control some of the variables. And to have them all in the same place, of course, means no travel. But it's a bummer, because there are a lot of pod sites and host sites that have bid on being part of the NCAA tournament bracket for years and years. And they look forward to that boost in their economy, to that influx of tourism and revenue. And while that may not be a part of the 2021 March Madness equation, we may not have fans at all, and I'm hoping that we do by next spring, it certainly is disappointing to those cities that will be losing that revenue that they were expecting. And I could say the same thing about Tampa. This is so painful for Tampa. Super Bowls are bid on and awarded years in advance. And here's Tampa that has the Super Bowl that, while it will have a few fans, a few thousand fans in limited capacity, at least that's the plan right now, will not have the same fan experience, have the same radio row type of excitement, electricity, won't have all the Hall of Famers that are around all the time walking through this mass of radio and TV stations for interviews. There won't be nearly the people who come in to cover the Super Bowl, much less the fans who are there on site and the sponsors and all of the pomp and circumstance that goes along with it. Tampa is really missing out. It's a little bit like Las Vegas with the NFL draft in 2020. So maybe Tampa will have another opportunity in the near future. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.